VSiN. This is Bet LA with Anita Marks on 710 ESPN.
Previewing all the NFL game odds to get you ready to wager each week on all the NFL action, college football, plus all the local teams and NBA action later this fall. This is Bet LA with Anita Marks on 710 ESPN. And tonight's edition of Bet LA with Anita Marks is made possible by Teza. Get more focus and energy in your daily life with Teza Nutrient Pouches. Visit TezaEnergy.com and make your mouth happy.
Bet LA with Anita Marks on 710 ESPN.
Bet LA with Anita Marks right now.
Welcome back to Bet LA here on 710 ESPN LA. It is the Saturday we've all been waiting for, and that's USC, of course, going up against UCLA. Bill Conley joins us, who does a great job covering USC for ESPN, to really do a deep dive into this matchup. USC is favored by 2.5 in some places. The over-under is a hefty number, 75.5, 76 in some places. So, Bill, first things first, you know, let's start obviously with USC and the fact that, you know, Travis Dye is injured and of course is not going to play in this matchup. How much of a factor do you feel that's going to be in this offense come Saturday against UCLA?
Well, it's hard to say because he was having a great year and it's a terrible ending to the season. Obviously, it was a great story that he was kind of building there, but as far as the USC run game goes, you know, Austin Jones has been doing really well. And honestly, the offensive line has been doing really well, just very clean up front, very good blocking as a whole. And so, I mean, you have that and you've got other talented backs. In theory, this doesn't have to drop off that much. One of the numbers I tend to track is just success rate. Like, how frequently are you getting, 50% of your yards on first down, 70% on second, 100% on third? USC is fourth in the country in rushing success rate so far this year. Not as many big plays as other teams, but they're just so good at getting 5 yards on first down and whatnot. And I don't think that was just Travis Dye. So this doesn't necessarily have to knock them off course all that much.
That's interesting because a lot of people, I'm reading, a lot of analysis, a lot of handicapping. A lot of people feel that, wow, would die out. This is a USC team and Lincoln Riley, they're going to have to become one dimensional with Caleb Williams and how that's going to play into the matchup. But you're saying that's not necessarily the case.
Well, and I think, let's be honest, against UCLA's defense, you kind of have your choice here. They're going to make your running backs look pretty efficient no matter who it is, and then also you can throw pretty well too. All of the advantages in this game are on the offensive side. So maybe if you're thinking about higher degree of difficulty games down the stretch, maybe a rematch against Utah or however this plays out in the Pac-12 championship game, if you are lucky enough to make the playoff, then you're playing Georgia or whatever, maybe at that point losing that extra little bit from Travis Dye hurts. Against UCLA, I don't think it does. This is a game where any stop is extremely valuable for either defense, and USC should be able to run the ball pretty well.
So much on the line here for USC, right? Where talking about getting in the top four and potentially competing for the national championship. So a little bit more pressure, I should say a lot more pressure coming into this matchup. And also an opportunity for Caleb Williams to really make a Heisman statement. He's not up there. It's in regard to being favored. And I want to say, I wrote it down before we started the show today, 12-1, you could wager that Williams wins the Heisman. What are you expecting from him Saturday against this UCLA defense?
I mean, big things probably. And this is the moment for Williams and USC as a whole. Like, they, Williams, he might be too far back in the Heisman race, and USC might be too far back in the CFP race. But if they really shift into gear, and obviously the offense has been in at least fourth gear for most of the season, but if they really, really kind of come together as a team, the defense played pretty well, at least. It was Colorado, but they still, did pretty well for the most part, and the offense came along eventually. If they really kind of make a statement against UCLA and then do it again against Notre Dame and do it again in the Pac-12 title game, then they still have a chance to make up a lot of ground. It's just, I think it almost feels like we're taking Caleb Williams for granted to a certain degree. Everybody kind of expected him to be great. He's probably honestly been better than any sort of projections would have had, but he's still, the last few weeks, haven't played a good defense in a while, and I think people are kind of taking it for granted a little bit. So now's the kind of chance to make a statement, and we'll see what they can do against UCLA.
You know, you talk about the defense, and of course, we know we saw Arizona putting up 34 against UCLA last week. That was embarrassing, I'm sure. But, like, you know, USC's defense hasn't been anything outstanding. In fact, no. They're 97th in rushing defense, and of course now have to go up against Zach Charbonnet, who's, you know, he's averaging 200 yards a game. It's just ridiculous. So, you know, I'm expecting, my play here is, I love the over here. I think USC could put up 65 points by themselves. You know, but defensively, how do you see this playing out?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest obstacle to the over being that high is just that USC plays at one of the slowest tempos in the country and keeps the drive total down. And really, neither team makes a ton of big plays. They're extremely efficient and they keep moving the chains, but it'll take them 6, 8, 10 plays to score. So, you know, maybe that adds up and they just don't get enough possessions to hit mid-70s, but they're going to score a lot. It's really, I realize I was, you know, in the columns I write, I was writing the same things about TCU Texas last week, but this is a pretty extreme version just in terms of the size of the advantages of the offenses here. They're very, very good. And, you know, last week UCLA really did kind of just blink at the moment. Their offense or their defense was pretty bend, don't break, but they gave up more big plays than they're used to. The offense blinked a couple times. We'll see how they respond to that, if that's like the start of a fade or they just, you know, they're angry now and they have a point to prove. That's going to play a big role in all of this. But yeah, there aren't going to be many stops. It's just a question of how many possessions they end up with.
You know, the last four meetings, they have been a track meet, all four of them. Of course, last year, UCLA 62-33. What I find interesting here is each team's defense is bad in regard to what each other team, what the opponent right. does, right? As I said, USC, bad rushing defense, UCLA, best rushing offense. However, UCLA, one of the worst teams against mobile quarterbacks. Their linebackers don't cover well. So the matchup here for both offenses could be pretty explosive.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think really, I mean, like I was saying, there are very, very few advantages for defenses. I think the only way that it really differentiate here, UCLA tends to do a little bit better job of preventing big plays. They get carved up, but they can, you know, at least prevent the really big gashes, maybe force a field goal. That's kind of their best hope. USC does a better job. They were pretty lucky. They were really lucky early on in the season with turnovers, just the number of you know, they weren't breaking up passes. They were only intercepting them. That doesn't, that doesn't last all season. And the fumble recovery thing, they were recovering every fumble. And that's kind of, obviously, that isn't as much of a thing anymore. But they do play better red zone defense than UCLA. And it's just going to be those little things. Anytime you hold your opponent to a field goal, it's a humongous deal in this game. Any turnover is humongous. It's just going to be these little things. And we'll see who's better able to not only force the offenses to just kind of nibble and take 6 or 8 yards at a time, and then who can actually force a field goal or two. It's, it really does have all the makings of a track meet.
I was also listening to an analyst earlier today talking about, I mean, and this is like really getting into the weeds, how Chip Kelly's defensive coordinator is from the NFL, and so his defense has a really hard time in coverage because the hash marks are wider in college football, and how Lincoln Riley and his coaching staff takes advantage of that. And I was like, whoa, we're really doing a deep dive into this analysis and trying to, like, you know, pinpoint like you know, all the pros and all the cons. But with that being said, share with us, what's your vision here? What's the game script? How does this play out? Who wins? What's your gut telling you?
Yeah, I mean, not knowing how UCLA is going to respond, you know, it really could be the start of a slide here. They did hit a decent-sized spunk last season. Now, you know, not knowing how that's going to play and therefore just kind of putting it to the side, on paper, this is an extremely even game. The over, anything over 70 points, I usually say no, under. It'll be under more often than not. It is going to be dictated, I think, by the number of possessions and everything. But it's To me, you know, the line being as close as it is, I'm going to take whoever's getting points, and I think I lean UCLA in that regard, unless they just fall flat from here on out. But they really, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, pretty much Caleb Williams is equal. Obviously, last week there were at least a couple of hiccups that cost them. But Charbonnet and Thompson-Robinson and Bobo, they can really kind of match what USC does, and I think this is if what we saw last week from USC is maybe a hint of improvement defensively, that'd be really well timed, because for the season, the overall averages are no better than UCLA's, and this just comes down to precision and who has to settle for field goals. I think it's going to be super tight. I hope it's super tight. That'd be a lot of fun. And I guess give me UCLA because they're the underdogs at the moment.
Bill, before we let you go, let's look big picture here, right? Like where it stands right now, I have Georgia, I have Michigan beating Ohio State. Again, just my two cents, right? I think Michigan's the more complete team. Obviously, I love their running attack, and I think Ohio State's injuries are going to play a role in that matchup. TCU, they've got Baylor and Iowa State left, unless they wet the bed against Baylor, who knows? Tennessee... I think will win out with South Carolina and Vandy. And because Michigan, I have Michigan beating Ohio State, it opens the door for either Tennessee or USC to get in. So, who are your final four? How do you think who are going to be the final four for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest obstacle for USC here is that Tennessee is extremely likely to get to 11-1, and that pair of wins over Alabama and LSU is going to power that resume from here on out. Even though they finished with South Carolina and Vandy, like they don't have any extra opportunities now to add to the resume, but it's still going to be a pretty good case for them there. And I think if you're a USC fan, you probably need to be rooting for Ohio State overall, because we saw in the initial CFP rankings that the committee really, really wasn't impressed with Michigan's strength of schedule. The non-conference schedule was obviously very, very light, and they were below Clemson, even though there was no indication that Michigan was a worse team than Clemson in any way. I think that was a little hint. And if they lose to Ohio State, if they get blown out, especially by Ohio State, that might open the door if USC really does kind of gain steam here down the stretch. But if it's Ohio State, they've looked good enough all year with all the injuries. The fact that really hasn't cost them yet is mind-blowing. Jackson Smith and Jigba, Travion Henderson, some of the best players in the country have barely played or have been missing a lot of games, and they're still just trucking right along. I think the committee will look much more favorably on them if they're the team with the loss. So if you're USC, root for Ohio State to blow out Michigan. Root for Tennessee to maybe, they're not going to lose, but to not look very good here down the stretch against South Carolina or Vandy. And then just hope your team catches fire. That might be enough to make up the gap, but I'm not completely sure. It's still a pretty big gap, I think.
Bill, thank you so much for spending some time with us to break this down, and a great preview. Really do appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
You got it. Bill Conley joining us, covering USC for ESPN. We get back, I'll give you my picks in this matchup. I already told you I like the over, but I also have, can you believe it? Prop bets are already on the board. And I've already gone to the window. And I'll tell you where I'm spending my hard-earned money next, right here on Bet LA, 710 ESPN LA.
This is Bet LA with Anita Marks on 710 ESPN, made possible tonight by Teza. Get more focus and energy in your daily life with Teza nutrient pouches. Visit TezaEnergy.com and make your mouth happy. Now more of Bet LA with Anita Marks on 710 ESPN.
Had some really, really cool times of the team surging on all three sides, which we said was going to be a big deal. And I thought our guys responded and did it. Really played pretty well defensively from the jump. Pressure, just sound play across the board. It took us a little bit to get going offensively, but we obviously able to settle in there and get rolling pretty good. So proud of the way that everybody stepped up. Guys were awesome. Just obviously really proud of the win and to get another one here at home. So obviously some exciting opportunities coming up that we'll be looking forward to.
Head coach Lincoln Riley talking about USC coming off of a win. And they've got to be feeling really good about themselves. Of course, you want to ride high coming into this matchup, right? The Battle of the Left Coast. USC going up against UCLA. USC is favored by 2.5. The over-under is at 75.5, 75.5, 76 in some places. I wouldn't be surprised if that line now has jumped to -3. Again, we have Tyler and Rebecca who are producing the show. I was asking in the break, are either of you going? And you said no, but you think a number of people from the station are going.
Yeah.
You think good what, like they
like a like handful.
They're going to get a, like, did they like, you know, rent a bus? Is it like a big like party? Like, is it?
Oh, I don't know if it's going to be a big shindig. They should make it one if it's not one already, for sure. But,
right?
You know, being on the outskirts of the plans, I don't have a whole lot of details.
That just doesn't sound nice, on the outskirts of the plan.
Well, you got to express interest to get invited places.
Okay. So if I came to you and I said, hey, Tyler, Rebecca, I've got tickets to USC UCLA on Saturday. Let's go.
We both would say, who's going to run the Dr. Clapper show?
Oh. Okay.
But hey,
it.
Maybe after. Yeah, I'm there.
Yeah. So, of course, as we just heard from Lincoln Riley, he's thrilled, obviously, that USC is coming off of a win. But unfortunately, UCLA is not, losing to Arizona, of all teams. Like, one of the worst. Like, what? Talk about a crap game, 34-28. Let's listen in. This is Chip Kelly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not worried about going forward. So it's we'll come back like we normally do. You know, we'll watch the tape as a staff, make the proper corrections, and then back to work on Monday. And, you know, we got two games left in the regular season, and that's what our sole focus and attention is when we get on Monday. You know, we got to correct the mistakes that were made tonight, and then move on to the last home game here in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, but you lost to Arizona. It's not like you lost to Oregon. You lost to Arizona. You know, it's really interesting that, you know, that, like, when we use the word, I don't like to use the word trap game, but when we use the trap game, really a lot of it comes down to the coaching staff and how a coaching staff, like, so for example, the Giants are taking on the Detroit Lions this week, but they go to Dallas and they're playing Dallas on Thursday for Thanksgiving. So I worked for the Giants for about 7 years, so I still have people inside that building I know well. And so I picked up the phone, I called, and I was like, all right, what's going on? I'm like, is this a trap game? And I don't like to use that phrase, but I asked. I said, what's going on? Are they focusing on Dallas on Thanksgiving? And the response I got was, not with this coaching staff, Anita. Nope. They are ready for Detroit. So a lot of it, you know, a lot of it is a coaching staff, and, you know, is a win against USC more important for Chip Kelly and UCLA than Arizona? Absolutely. You know, but again, I'm not in those walls. I don't know how they prepared or lack of preparation for Arizona, but it definitely looked and had the feeling of a trap game, and a team like UCLA that's putting all their eggs in the let's beat the USC basket, right? All right, so how am I going to play this? I love the over here. 75.5, 76, I'm going to play it. I think both these defenses are okay, I won't use the word horrendous. Both these defenses are bad. They're not great. And what I find really interesting here is what both these teams do offensively is an excellent matchup for both of them with the opponent defense. What do I mean by that? USC, 97th in the country rushing defense. 97. Not even like, oh, at least they're in the top 50. No. 97. Okay? Meanwhile, what does UCLA do? We know. Charbonnet. That's right. Tremendous. Averages 200 yards a game. Just ridiculous. Like, in a good way, right? Why there's not more talk and more hype about him in the Heisman when, you know, there's, you know, hype for Michigan's running back, I don't quite get, nonetheless. So I think Zach's going to have a field day. And oh, by the way, the over-under for his rushing yards is 127.5. So again, I've already gone to the window. I've already laid it. And by the way, I was on with Mason in Ireland last Thursday. I'll be on with him tomorrow at 5:15. I'm sure they'll ask me about this game. Last week, UCLA in Arizona, I told him my play is Charbonnet over rushing yards. And again, he almost had like, what, another 200-yard game. So he crushed it. He crushed it yet last week. He'll crush it again this week. Also, I got him scoring 2 touchdowns at plus 150. So over 127.5 rushing yards and in him scoring 2 touchdowns at plus 150. You know, that's their elixir. That's their straw that stirs their, you know, pretty light blue drink. So that matchup bodes well. Meanwhile, for UCLA, their defense, not good against mobile quarterbacks. And their linebackers can't cover. So that plays into exactly what USC does well with Caleb Williams. Okay? And I've got him passing for over 2.5 touchdowns, and you get that at minus 155. Might be a little bit too much juice. That's okay. What does that mean? You're laying $155 to win $100. Also, I got him over 322.5 passing yards. And that's at 105. You don't have to lay a lot of juice for that. This is a great opportunity for him to go on a 8 o'clock prime time, baby. And Fox has their number one broadcast team on the program. Okay? I mean, this is doesn't get bigger than this, doesn't get brighter than this for Caleb Williams to showcase what he can do and potentially try to make state a better case for himself for that Heisman Trophy. Going up against a UCLA team whose defense, like I said, no bueno, not good against mobile quarterbacks. The last four meetings these two teams have faced each other, they've been a track meet. Last year, as we know, UCLA 62-33. Like I said, each team's defense, not great. So score-wise, what am I looking at here? 63-58, something like that. I literally believe that USC is going to put up at least 60 points, at least. I have a lean towards USC just because, and also after talking to Conley, you know, I put their rushing attack on the back burner. But he doesn't seem to be too worried, and that's no disrespect to Travis Dye, but he seems to have the utmost confidence in this offensive line with Austin Jones and their success rate. I thought that was a great part of the interview was the success rate, fourth best in the nation in regard to rushing behind that offensive line. So I think that's really, really important. So that's how I'm playing this bad boy. Quick break. We come back. We've got a Thursday night football game. This is the great thing about being on Wednesdays is we get to preview it as opposed to recap it. Rob Domofsky, who does a phenomenal job covering the Green Bay Packers for ESPN, joins the show next. You're listening to Bet LA here on 710 ESPN LA.
This is Bet LA with Anita Marks on 710 ESPN, made possible tonight by Teza. Get more focus and energy in your daily life with Teza Nutrient Pouches. Visit TezaEnergy.com and make your mouth happy. Now more of Bet LA with Anita Marks on 710 ESPN.
Welcome back to Bet LA here on 710 ESPN LA. Getting you ready. This is the great thing about us being on a Wednesday. We're typically on a Thursday, and so we're recapping the Thursday night game. Tonight, we get to preview the Thursday night game. And of course, as we know, it's the Green Bay Packers coming off a really impressive win against the Dallas Cowboys, going up against the Tennessee Titans. And Rob Domofsky joins us now. He does a phenomenal job at ESPN covering the Packers. So Rob, welcome in. How you doing?
I'm good, Anita. How are you?
Fighting something, but towards the tail end. And so I feel like Muhammad Ali right now.
Well, let's at least where you are, you don't have any snow on the ground. We've got like an inch of snow right now. So,
ooh, Ooh, and I do want to get into the weather conditions. So so the Packers are at home. They are favored by 3. The over-under is at 41. So let's start right there. Weather conditions, everything I'm hearing, it's going to be brutal, right? Temperatures in the 20s, weather conditions, wind howling at like 20 to 25 miles an hour. You're going to feel like it's in the single digits. And does that not bode well and absolutely play into some of the best games I feel we've seen Aaron Rodgers have been in those temperatures?
Yeah, like you'd think, okay, this is going to be a running game and they're not going to be able to throw the ball down the field. And lo and behold, that he has in the past. And, you know, now he's got a guy in Christian Watson that maybe he can throw the ball down the field too with a little bit more regularity after what we saw on Sunday. We are expecting a little bit more snow at some point on the day of the game. I haven't seen exactly what time. I do know this. I have to do a bunch of live TV hits tomorrow afternoon, and the Packers told us that if they need to remove snow, we are not allowed in the field area, so I might be doing TV hits from the stands, which tells you that there's going to be weather on the field, which might impact the game. Look, I mean, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, they have played the Titans in a snow game before. And you know, like, it doesn't always just mean that it's going to be, you know, run. That just, it's sometimes it is, but you just can't count on that.
So let's break down both sides here. Let's start with the Packers, right? Again, weather conditions are going to bode well for them, obviously. You know, they are a team that, you know, you've got Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon, although a little disappointed. My fantasy team is pretty disappointed that we're not getting a heavier dose of A.J. Dillon. But you're going up against arguably top three rushing defense in the NFL when it comes to the Tennessee Titans. However, they're not great against receiving running backs in the passing game. And of course, we know Aaron Jones, he does it on land and on sea. So he can be a big part of this passing attack. I feel that could be the elixir here on Thursday night. Is Aaron Jones in the passing game? Am I onto something?
You certainly might be, but I will tell you this. A.J. Dillon had a huge game. His breakout game came in 2020 against the Titans. Jones was out that day. It was December 27th at Lambeau Field. 21 carries, 124 yards, 2 touchdowns for A.J. Dillon in that game. And I'm trying to figure out why they are playing the Titans at Lambeau Field twice in 2 years, which those AFC games, it must have something to do with the 17-game schedule or whatever, because you don't normally play these teams but once every 8 years. You know, in the AFC NFC crossover deal, but I would keep an eye on AJ Dillon tomorrow. Now, look, Aaron Jones has been very, very good in the passing game. He's also really good in the run game. I mean, if you look at his yards per carry, he's right up there in the top 5 in the league. And then the problem was they weren't getting him enough attempts until last week. Really, they just hadn't been able to get his attempts up. He was like somewhere around 15th or 20th in actual attempts and top 5 in yards per carry. So last week they obviously were able to move the chains a little bit. They just haven't had a lot of third down conversions, which means they haven't had a lot of total plays. I mean, like, their play counts have been in like the high 50s and low 60s, and they want to be over 70 if they're going to be successful. So I think all that has sort of skewed everything that you thought you could count on and you thought you knew about the Packers offense, just because they just haven't been able to get anything going consistently.
Here's another interesting little nugget I came across. 80% of the touchdowns that the Green Bay Packers score are passing touchdowns. 90% of the touchdowns that the Tennessee Titans allow against their defense are passing touchdowns. So
I'll tell you what, I mean, you know who's really good in those situations? Alan Lazard. I mean, if they're in the red zone, like, he's going to look for Alan Lazard if it's going to be a, you know, first and goal at the 8-yard line situation, because he's so good in traffic. So if that holds true, you know, there's a lot of guys that might be able to have big games tomorrow.
You know, and also keep in mind, Rob, this is a Tennessee Titans defense. They've got a lot of injuries. And working, you know, obviously on a short work week, you know, Simmons, Dupree, I'm not expecting them to play. So I just, you know, not to take anything away from Aaron Jones, and I love A.J. Dillon. Like I said, I was hoping more from him at this point in time in the season. But I truly believe in everything, all the research I've done and what I've uncovered. I just feel like in order for the Green Bay Packers to win this matchup against Tennessee, they're going to have to throw the ball.
Yeah, and you know what the interesting thing, Anita, is, and they said this after the Cowboys game, they got more single high safety looks than they thought they would ever get, which tells you that they were daring the Packers to throw the football. Like, in what universe did teams dare the Packers to throw the ball? Like, for years, it was always they were sitting back in the Tampa 2 and trying to keep everybody in front of you and not getting beat down the field. And because Rodgers had been so ineffective in the passing game, especially the deep passing game, they were like, all right, we dare you to throw the ball. And they finally did. You know, they capitalized on it. So I just wonder how that will affect, you know, how the Titans play defense. Now, the interesting thing, too, and Matt LaFleur has said this several times over his tenure here, he's like, whenever we're preparing for a team, we look at what they do and think we have an idea of what they do defensively because that's what they do against 80% of the teams, and then when they come out against us, they do something totally different because of the Aaron Rodgers factor. Like, so it'll be interesting to see if the game plans start to shift now more toward, okay, now we know Rodgers is kind of back, so we're not going to let him beat us.
But, you know, also, again, I'm looking at the wide receiving core, and I know I keep on referring to my fantasy teams. I just can't help myself. I mean, I do have 12, Rob, but and I do have and I think I have Lazard in like two or three of them. And I did pick up Watson this week off the waiver wire. You know, you're not dealing with a Devontae Adams. It's not like this passing attack has been prolific or anything. So
yeah, that's the thing. There's not one guy that you know is going to get 10 to 12 targets like there used to be. And, you know, Randall Cobb may be back. He returned to practice this week. They would have to actually add him to the 53 tomorrow, which they can do on a Thursday game. So there's a chance he might play, but there's no Romeo Doubs. He's got the ankle injury, so he's going to miss a second straight game. So it's base, and they cut Amari Rodgers, the punt returner, who was sort of the backup slot receiver after he fumbled, for the fifth time on punt returns the other day. So it's basically Lazard and Christian Watson with a little bit of Sammy Watkins, who's been, quite frankly, a huge disappointment. I actually thought that when they signed Sammy Watkins, they might be able to, you know, get a 50, 60 catch kind of year out of him, and that just it has not happened.
Rob Domofsky joining us here on Bet LA with a great preview for the Thursday night football game. The Packers going up against Tennessee. Packers favored by 3. The over-under is at 41. Let's talk about on the defensive side of the ball. It's all about Derrick Henry, right? He's the straw that stirs the drink. He's the elixir. Going up against a Packers rush defense that's ranked 27th in the NFL, which of course does not bode well. How are they? No, I don't think anyone could stop Derrick Henry, right? It's few and far between, but you know, what do you do in that regard? Especially, listen, you and I have been covering the NFL for a long time. It's going to be so cold. It's going to hurt to tackle more than the average bear, right?
and it might hurt the defensive guy. It might be, you know, more painful to the defensive guy when you're tackling a guy like Derrick Henry or trying to tackle a guy like Derrick Henry. I would say this. If you go back and look at the Cowboys game alone, that was like a microcosm of the Packers' run defense. Like, they got burned on draw play after draw play after draw play. I mean, it was – which surprised me when Mike McCarthy decided – at the end there, he was going to go for it on fourth down. I was surprised they didn't run on third down because they had such success with the draw game with Tony Pollard. And that's been really the biggest issue. Well, they've had more than one issue this year. But over the last couple of years, the run defense has been the Packers' biggest issue. Even last year when their overall ranking was pretty good, they were ninth overall in defense. I think their run defense was somewhere around 10th or 12th. Their yards per carry allowed was really bad. Like, they were 29th in rushing yards per attempt allowed. So it just told you that teams weren't, you know, because the Packers were often ahead so much, teams couldn't run so much. But to me, the true measure is not total yards. It's yards per attempt. And that's where the Packers have really been bad for the last couple of years. Now, the other things that they've struggled with are takeaways. Well, that turned around a little bit on Sunday against Dallas when a guy who probably nobody ever heard of, Rudy Ford, goes in and plays safety and comes up with two big interceptions that the Packers turned into points. But they had not been taking the ball away, Anita, anywhere near enough. And they've been playing, you know, from behind so much that teams are just running the ball. And they've had trouble with quarterback running. I mean, go back to the Giants game. I mean, Daniel Jones hurt him with his feet more than he did with his arm. So he just had trouble stopping quarterbacks, from trouble stopping running backs from running up the middle, trouble on outside zone plays, on draw plays. It's been a real – and it's been a surprise in the sense that they have so much talent defensively that everybody thought the offense would struggle a little bit, which it has, that the defense would kind of carry this team. They have 7 first-round picks on defense and 4, I guess, what you consider high-priced free agents, and they just have not performed.
Last thing I'm going to leave you with, the Tennessee Titans are the absolute worst second-half team in the NFL. They have only scored touchdowns on 7% of their offensive drives in the second half. And get this, Rob, feel free to use this on SportsCenter tomorrow because I'm sure you're going to be all over the place. They have 0 touchdowns in the fourth quarter all season long. 0,
is
not
that
one.
Right?
Yeah.
Wow.
How about that?
Well, for a while, the Packers were a terrible second-half team too, right? I mean, like, they couldn't get anything going in the second halves of games either. Now that changed. They flipped that against Dallas. But, yeah, so basically we could see, like, whoever's leading, you know, 17-14 after three quarters, it might end that way. Is that what we're possibly looking at?
Possibly. Before we go, you know, give us your game script. How does this play out? What's the score? What are you anticipating here?
Yeah, I think the Packers are at an advantage because I think, you know, at least anecdotally, I don't have the statistically, the home Thursday games that are healthy, like the home teams that are healthy. The Packers didn't have any additional injuries on Thursday. And like you said, Tennessee's been banged up a little bit in the secondary. So I think that, you know, if you'd asked me 10 days or a week ago, I would have said Packers are going to lose to Dallas. Packers are going to lose to Tennessee. Packers are going to lose to Philadelphia. And the losing streak goes to 8. But it's amazing how one game can sort of change your outlook. But I think the outlook for the Packers is much, much better now because they beat Dallas. And they feel like they found something. They feel like they've got you know, a little bit of a jolt. Rodgers used that term, jolt. And, you know, look, Christian Watson is I think he's going to factor in the game again, because he's their fastest player, and they don't have anybody that can do what he does. And remember, he had a rushing touchdown earlier in the year on one of those jet motion plays. And so I think if they can continue to take advantage of Christian Watson's speed, I think they have a chance to win this game. I really do. Now, I will tell you this. I have been so bad against picking the Packers against the spread. I'm in a pool with some buddies, and they're all musicians. None of them knows anything about sports. And the guy who runs it picks 8 college games and 8 NFL games every week, and it's all against the spread. The Packers aren't in that. He doesn't pick them every week. But in the times that he's picked them over the last, like, 2.5 seasons, I am 0-25 picking the Packers against the spread. I've lost 25 straight times. And these guys give me the hardest time about this. I thought they won't be on the card this week because they don't do the Thursday game, but I thought I had broken the streak at Buffalo when it was Buffalo was a 10.5 point favorite, what did it end up being? 10, right? I think Buffalo scored, or I mean the Packers scored late to make it 27-17. I just can't get it right. So you're at. I'm glad I'm not out in Vegas, because I'd be losing it right now.
Well, next time I'll have your musician friend on the show. Rob, I appreciate you. I know that you will crush it tomorrow all over the ESPN airwaves. Thank you, my friends, for spending some time with us tonight.
Yeah, we'll be on TV from Lambeau starting at with the This Just In show and be on TV all day leading up to the game.
I love it. Fantastic. All right. More to come here on Bet LA. I'll have my picks for your Thursday night game when we get back right here on 710 ESPN LA.
This. This is Bet LA with Anita Marks on 710 ESPN, made possible tonight by Teza. Get more focus and energy in your daily life with Teza Nutrient Pouches. Visit TezaEnergy.com and make your mouth happy. Now more of Bet LA with Anita Marks on 710 ESPN.
It's the same message that's always been delivered after our wins. Same message delivered after our losses. You know, controlling the things that we can. Come out here today, we didn't do that. We didn't do it. And today it got us. So, you know, it's very important to control the things that you can. Controlling your ball security. Knowing where the operation of the play is supposed to go. And just execution. Those are all things that we can control, and we have to do a better job of that.
That's Jalen Hurts. You can hear in his voice the disappointment, of course, the Eagles losing to the Commanders on Monday night. So now the Eagles are sitting in the NFC East at 8-1, the Commanders 5-5. What a competitive division this is, with the Giants at 7-2. Who would have thunk? And, of course, the Cowboys at 6-3, coming off of a loss to the Green Bay Packers. Of course, we just heard from Rob Demoski, who covers the Green Bay Packers. They'll be taking on the Tennessee Titans tomorrow. How am I playing this matchup? Excuse me, on Thursday night? Well, quite a few ways. Number one, the line is 3. I don't have a problem buying a line down. What does that mean? So typically, if you're playing a line that's -3, right? It means that the Packers have to win by more than 3 points in order for you to win the bet. So I'm going to buy a half a point down. So what does it mean is, like, I'm going to buy it down where now I'm going to have to lay instead of laying $110 to win $100, I'm now going to lay $137 down to win $100. Because I typically games end in multiples of 3 and 7, 10, right? So it's called the hook. So I'm going to buy the hook down to -2.5. I'll lay the 137. I do believe the Packers win. Also, my favorite play here is the under. I think the under is my favorite play, and that's at 41. As I talked to Rob, the weather is supposed to be brutal. Again, 20 degrees, 20 mile per hour winds. So it's going to possible snow. So it's going to feel like it's like 7 degrees out there. And guys just don't want to tackle when that happens. So I do believe that that Derrick Henry is going to run wild. I'll get to that in just a second. But Rodgers thrives in these weather conditions, especially at home. Okay, the Packers score on 37% of their offensive drives at home compared to only 20% on the road. So Aaron at Lambeau, definitely a huge advantage there. The Tennessee Titans are the worst second-half team in the league. I shared that with Rob, scoring only 7% of their offensive possessions. 16 punts in 2 games. They punt 50% of the time. They have not scored a touchdown in the fourth quarter. The Packers are the fourth. The Titans are the first slowest-paced teams in the NFL. And the Titans under has hit 6 straight games. Their last 5, they're only averaging a total of 32 points. So the under is the play there. Like I said, I'm going to play the Packers -2.5. Prop bets, I like Rodgers over 1.5 touchdown passes. I also like him over 33.5 passing attempts. Why? Tennessee Titans are really good against the run. So what happens? Gunslingers are averaging 40 passing attempts a game against their defense. So it's got to be my favorite prop bet. Over 33.5 passing attempts. Derrick Henry over 97.5 rushing yards. Like I said, he's going to be the straw that stirs that drink. Green Bay, one of the worst defenses against the rush. And in that cold weather, dudes aren't going to want to tackle. You just don't. It hurts. Trust me. It just hurts. My best bet, Aaron Jones over 24.5 receiving yards. Why? Tennessee is excellent against the rush, but no bueno. They are not good against running backs coming out of the backfield in the passing game. Jones is averaging 20 receiving yards a game, 9 for 53 last week. He's got 228 receiving yards on the season. Okay? So over 24.5 receiving yards for Aaron Jones. That's my best bet heading into this matchup. Quick break. We come back. We kick off hour 3 and we do a deep dive into the World Cup. Can't wait, as Bart Scott likes to say. JJ Duvaney, joins us next. Buckle up. He is going to get us ready. We'll be right back. Bet LA here on 710 ESPN LA.